Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is On Air Daily News for October 5th, 2022. I'm Naima Latif on this Wednesday afternoon. Top news is a surge in women registering to vote. National voter registration totals are showing a great surge in the number of women registering to vote after the response to the Roe versus Wade Supreme Court decision to overturn abortion rights. Will the November 8th election come down to a single controversial issue? Both Democrats and Republicans are spinning the stories on abortion to their advantage when they can, but the polls will determine how women really interpret this issue. And the outcome of races in key states could change the balance of power in Congress. President Joe Biden convened the White House Task Force on Reproductive Health Care Access on Tuesday, October 4th, for the second time since the Supreme Court's reversal of Roe versus Wade, and outlined steps the administration is taking to protect abortion access across the country. Sunday marked 100 days since the Supreme Court's landmark abortion ruling, and Tuesday's meeting marked just the second time the entire task force had met since its inception. Vice President Kamala Harris, White House Gender Policy Council Director Jennifer Klein, Education Secretary Miguel Cardona, and a host of experts joined President Biden in condemning efforts by Republican-controlled states to ban abortion in wake of the Dobbs decision, which overturned abortion rights. So we'll bring you a bit of the meeting as Education Secretary Miguel Cardona starts out and makes some remarks, and then we hear from some experts on the topic of contraception and availability to students. In particular, President Biden had singled out actions taken by the University of Idaho to stop offering birth control and other contraceptions to students. The White House estimates bans on abortion block nearly 30 million women from abortion access in their home states after 6 weeks of pregnancy. So here we're joining Education Secretary Miguel Cardona on the task force meeting at the White House.
Thank you, Mr. President. I hear your grave concerns about maintaining access to contraception and reproductive health services on our college campus, and ensuring there's accurate, reliable information for students and for educators. Students need access to health care to thrive in school and in life, and that includes reproductive health care. Thank you also to Vice President Harris. In August, we met with college leaders grappling with new, sweeping restrictions to their states. Our work together is ongoing. It's clear. Dobbs' ruling has sown fear and confusion on our college campuses. I worry about the chilling effects this uncertainty, including about access to birth control, will have on students. I think about the 1 in 4 women who experience sexual assault in college and what this means for their safety and their well-being. I think about the college student I met in September who was unable to enroll until she escaped a violent abuser. Access to reproductive health care is vital to these students and to countless others for success in college and beyond. Today, my department is issuing a new resource to remind schools of their obligation under Title IX. For 50 years, Title IX has protected students from sex-based discrimination, and since 1975, it has also protected students from discrimination based on pregnancy, termination of pregnancy, or any related conditions. My department is fully committed to enforcing Title IX's protections. The resource also explains how to file a complaint with your school or our Office for Civil Rights if you or someone you know encounters discrimination. Today, I want to be clear with college leaders in America. Access to contraception should not be in question. And access to health care, including reproductive health care, is critical to the well-being and success of our nation's students. If you're committed to student success, you must be committed to student health. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Secretary Cardona, again, for your partnership, for your leadership. Now we're going to turn to the real experts in the room, the physicians who have come to talk about the impact that Dobbs is having and the laws passing across the country are having on their practice and their patients. So we're going to start with you, Dr. Nisha Verma.
Thank you. Good afternoon, President Biden, Vice President Harris, and distinguished members of the task force. It is an honor to join you today. My name is Dr. Nisha Verma, and I am a board-certified, fellowship-trained obstetrician-gynecologist who provides full-spectrum reproductive health care. I'm a fellow of the American College of OBGYNs and currently provide care in Georgia. Growing up in the South, I saw firsthand the devastating impacts of restrictions on contraception and abortion care in the lives of real people, my friends, family, and people in my community. They are the reason I am here before you today. I became a doctor and OBGYN because of my drive to care for people without judgment throughout the course of their lives, regardless of their health care needs. Now, the Supreme Court's decision to overturn the constitutional right to abortion care has wreaked havoc across this country as states, including Georgia, have severe abortion bans in effect and have threatened clinicians with criminal penalties. Because of a law that is not based in medicine or science, I am forced to turn away patients that I know how to care for. I have had teenagers with chronic medical conditions that make their pregnancy very high risk, and women with highly desired pregnancies who receive a terrible diagnosis of a fetal anomaly cry when they learn that they can't receive their abortion in our state and beg me to help them. Imagine looking someone in the eye and saying, I have all the skills and the tools to help you, but our state's politicians have told me I can't. Imagine having to tell someone, you are sick, but not sick enough to receive care in our state based on our law's very narrow exceptions. We train for years and years to be able to provide evidence-based, individualized care to our patients. Now, as a doctor in Georgia, I am being forced to grapple with impossible situations where the laws of my state directly violate the medical expertise I gained through years of training and the oath I took to provide the best care to my patients. My colleagues and I have to think about whether we're going to be criminalized and imprisoned, whether our licenses will be taken away, whether our livelihood will be threatened for providing compassionate, evidence-based care. Unfortunately, we've already seen these threats become a reality for our fellow OBGYN in Indiana over the summer. That absolutely has a chilling effect. I understand that abortion care can be a complicated issue for many people, just like so many aspects of healthcare and life can be. But I also know that abortion is necessary, compassionate, essential health care, and that my patients are capable of making complex, thoughtful decisions about their health and lives. I remain unwavering in my commitment to support people in my home and community in the South in whatever way I can. I appreciate continued efforts to secure access to comprehensive reproductive health care for my patients. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak with you today.
Thank you, Dr. Verma. Now we're going to turn to you, Dr. Kristen Lagerle.
Thank you so much, and it is truly a pleasure and a privilege to be here with you all today. My name is Dr. Kristen Lagerle. I am a general obstetrician-gynecologist in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and I'm a fellow of the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. In my practice, I provide comprehensive care for women and underrepresented populations. Prior to Dobbs, I was also an abortion provider in Sheboygan, at one of only four abortion clinics, all located in the southeastern part of the state. With the fall of Roe, our circumstances changed dramatically. We stopped providing abortions in Wisconsin altogether. As we've already discussed, we have a law in Wisconsin from 1849, which is 1 year older than the state and 70 years before women earned the right to vote in this country. This law makes it a felony for me to provide abortion care to my patients. There are no exceptions for rape and no exceptions for incest. The only exception is for the life of the mother. But pregnant people don't have a warning light that comes on when they've crossed that threshold. We have to use our clinical judgment, developed through over a decade of formal education, experience, and commitment, to make those kinds of sensitive, individualized decisions. So in places like Sheboygan County, where the district attorney has specifically said that he will prosecute physicians, can I count on him to trust my clinical judgment? Looking back, would we agree that I met the criteria, that my patient was sick enough? The effects are chilling. People in our state are being denied medication for miscarriage management. They are being denied treatment for in emergency departments while actively bleeding, presumably because the treatment for a miscarriage, the medical term is a spontaneous abortion, is essentially the same as the medication or procedure that can terminate an early pregnancy. Those who can afford it, the money, time away from work, assistance with childcare obligations, they now have to go to Illinois or Minnesota. Many, especially in abusive relationships or difficult social situations, they have to continue their pregnancies, or they resort to desperate measures. Downstream, this affects all of us. With physician burnout at an all-time high and a number of physicians leaving the field in the wake of the pandemic, our training programs can't keep up. Medical students and residents who had planned to stay and practice in Wisconsin are now wondering whether they will receive the training that they need to take care of their patients and whether they can live and work in a state where doctors can be jailed for fulfilling their duty of care. Last week, I spoke with two physicians who have served in a rural community that they love for many years. They've worked incredibly hard to keep their small obstetrical units open. But now, with the threat of criminal charges hanging over their heads, they told me that they have their resignation letters ready. Their backup plans are prepared. They need a safe place to practice and raise their families if Wisconsin's criminal abortion ban is determined to be enforceable. And this is the tip of the iceberg. The economic consequences are well documented. We are already suffering from reduced labor force participation, diminished earning potential, and fewer educational opportunities. And this, too, affects all of us. Our maternal mortality rates are the worst in the developed world. And in Wisconsin, a black mom is 5 times more likely to die as a result of pregnancy than a white mom. The number of pregnancy-related deaths are expected to rise dramatically with implementation of abortion bans, as women continue to lose access to essential, life-saving health care. America has a maternal mortality crisis. We have a rural health care crisis, and now we have a reproductive health care crisis. How many more crises can my patients, can our health care system, endure? Thank you.
Thank you.
And that was at the White House Task Force meeting yesterday. The Biden administration has received some expressions of concern from many health care rights advocates in the wake of the Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization, the Supreme Court case, which kicked off the now nationally discussed abortion bans. Today's newscast is brought to you by T&J Auto. Do you need a good, sturdy car now? Why pay full price when you can get the best for less? Pay cash, drive away today. Recent model cars available from $3,000 to $5,000. Call 312-721-6428. That's 312-721-6428. And say, I need a car now. Well, in Cook County news, the president of Cook County announced that there are now available funds, and people are urged to apply, especially if they are from families that are under the poverty line and are in need of financial assistance. And there are a number of families that have been looking for the county to come to their aid in these times of crisis. Applications for the Cook County Promise Guaranteed Income Pilot will be opening Thursday, October 6th. And this is a program that is expected to address some of the issues that many low-income families have had. Yesterday, President Tony Preckwinkle reminded residents that the Cook County Promise Guaranteed Income Pilot Program will be opening its application portal later this week online, and eligible Cook County residents will be able to apply for the pilot beginning tomorrow, Thursday, October 6th, by visiting promisepilot.cookcountyil.gov. That's promisepilot.cookcountyil.gov. The application portal will remain open until October 21st, and there's no benefit to applying early. After the application window closes, then final participants will be selected at random. President Preckwinkle said, after months of hard work, Cook County is proud to be launching the application portal for the largest publicly funded guaranteed income pilot in American history. We estimate that nearly 36% of Cook County residents will be eligible to participate, and I encourage everyone who meets the requirements to apply. Funded by the American Rescue Plan Act, the ARPA, the $42 million Promise Pilot will send monthly payments of $500 to 3,250 residents for 2 years. Applicants must be at least 18 years of age, a resident of Cook County, and have a household income at or below 250% of the federal poverty level. Again, go to promisepilot.cookcountyil.gov for applications. The pilot is open to Cook County households regardless of immigration status, and applicants will not be asked to disclose their citizenship status. Households that are already participating in another guaranteed income pilot, such as the Chicago Resilient Communities Pilot or Evanston's Guaranteed Income Pilot, are not eligible to apply. Cook County employees are also ineligible for the program. Cook County has contracted with the nonprofit organization Give Directly and their technology partner, AidKit, to run the application portal. The application will be needed to be completed via computer, tablet, or smartphone with access to the Internet. Applicants will also need to have their own email and or mobile phone number to apply and be contacted by Give Directly for follow-up. Sarah Moran, Give Directly U.S. country director, said Give Directly's goal is to create an easy, low-barrier process so that every eligible Cook County resident can apply to be part of this historic initiative. We are excited to partner with AidKit, our tech platform partner, to create a seamless and positive experience for all applicants. Individuals in need of assistance to complete the application or who need access to a computer, tablet, or smartphone will be able to access in-person and virtual support during the application window in locations across the county. Information about assistance options can be found at www.engagecookcounty.com/promise. That's www.engagecookcounty.com/promise. Support is available in English, Spanish, French, Polish, Arabic, Hindi, Urdu, Mandarin, Cantonese, Korean, Tagalog, and Vietnamese. Cook County will hold a public webinar for residents interested in applying for the Promise Pilot on October 11, 2022 at 5 p.m. Central Time. Interested residents can join the webinar by visiting bit.ly/promisepilot. That's bit.ly/promisepilot. The county also recently hosted a webinar for community groups and organizations on how best to assist residents in applying for this opportunity. View the recording and presentations when you go to the website. Payments to program participants are expected to begin December 2022. For more information about the Cook County Promise Guaranteed Income Pilot, please visit www.engagecookcounty.com/promise. That's www.engagecookcounty.com/promise. Well, across the nation, the weather continues to be a cause of concern. President Biden has promised the residents of Florida that they will receive assistance. And the president is making sure that he keeps residents updated on what the government has planned when it comes to its financing of assistance for those who are struggling to survive the hurricanes. At a White House briefing yesterday, the president's press secretary stated some of the plans and other issues of concern. First, the weather in Florida and assistance to those who are struggling to survive and looking for assistance, and then the war in Ukraine and how this particular condition is going to affect those who are in the midst of battle and even those who may be dissenters of the war. What is the United States doing to support its Ukrainian ally? Let's join the press secretary, Karine Jean-Pierre, at a press conference yesterday with an update.
As you heard from the president just this morning, this administration is ready to help the people of Florida in every way possible. And when the storm passes, we will be there to help Florida rebuild and recover. We are committed to seeing this through. Yesterday, President Biden spoke with Governor DeSantis, as well as Tampa Bay area mayors, to discuss the steps the federal government is taking to help Florida prepare for Hurricane Ian. And tomorrow he will visit FEMA's headquarters to receive a briefing on federal response efforts for Hurricane Ian. Already, we have deployed significant federal resources to the region to help prepare for the hurricane. We have more than 1,300 federal response workers on the ground in Florida. There are 3.7 million meals and 3.5 million liters of water pre-positioned in Alabama. 110,000 gallons of fuel and 18,000 pounds of propane are pre-staged for immediate deployment. 300 Army Corps personnel are on the ground to support power and fuel assessments. 300 ambulances are supporting local officials. And multiple federal disaster medical assistance teams are deployed to Florida and Georgia. As President said this morning, the storm is incredibly dangerous and life-threatening. Heed warnings from state and local officials. If you're told to shelter in place, please do so. Shelter in place. Additionally, we know that disruptions from hurricanes can pose challenges to markets, but the latest projections show that major refineries should not be impacted by Hurricane Ian. As the president said today, oil and gas companies should not use this moment as an excuse to raise gas prices. I also want to speak to the sham referenda that Russia has staged in occupied areas in Ukraine. These referenda were straight from the Kremlin playbook. They were manufactured and manipulated. Ukrainian civilians were forced to cast ballots under the watch of armed guards. We have seen videos and reports of armed officials going door to door, intimidating voters and stopping Ukrainians on the street and forcing them to vote. These so-called referenda have been an exercise in coercion and disinformation executed by puppet authorities following orders from Russia. Based on our information, every aspect of this referendum process was pre-staged and orchestrated by the Kremlin. Weeks, if not months ago, Russian officials planned to announce these predetermined outcomes. The Russian government instructed security forces to occupy referendum workers as they collected votes, and the Russian government falsified the results to advance the lie that the Ukrainian people want to be part of Russia. But as we all know, to the contrary, the world has seen very, very clearly that Ukrainians do not want to be part of Russia. In reality, the Ukrainian people are continuing to fight for their independence with support from the United States and allies across the globe. They have courageously resisted Russia's invasion. The Ukrainian people have defended their territory heroically cost. In occupied areas of Ukraine, Russian forces have committed war crimes and atrocities, killed thousands of civilians, and subjected thousands more to filtration operations. And it is in these occupied areas that Russia would have us believe, against all evidence and also all logic, that the Ukrainian people have suddenly chosen to join. But we know the truth. These referenda are illegitimate and, frankly, outrageous.
And that was the White House press conference on issues regarding help for Florida and help for the Ukraine. That's all for today's On Air Daily News. Join us again tomorrow, 1 p.m. Central to 1:30 p.m. Central. Call in with your good news, 515-605-9749. Go to our website, www.blogtalkradio.com/onairdailynews. Until tomorrow, enjoy the rest of your day.